Playground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. Doug Kellett here with me. And Doug, battleground. Battleground is the word of the week, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, at times I think the various states that are in the battleground of the presidential sweepstakes keep changing on us at times. You know, a state will come in there and that we maybe haven't thought of. But I keep looking at it, Mike. It's, you know, the traditional ones that we know are going to be very important: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. I saw a poll this week that Wisconsin, the people there are not happy about this whole impeachment proceeding that's been underway by the Democrats. They don't favor impeachment. They want a chance to vote. Now, Trump has been trailing in some polls in Wisconsin, which, you know, I know we think is very important for his reelection. But it's kind of interesting that while they haven't been really having Trump at the top of their list in some of these polls, they still don't want him impeached. I thought that was kind of interesting this week.
Yeah, I think what it gets to is that Americans have a fundamental sense of fairness. And they look at this.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I mean, that's true. And there's also something, right, about, and we saw this during the Clinton impeachment back in the 90s, where they don't like the president getting what they think picked on at times. You know, even if he's done something wrong in their opinion or whatever, there's kind of, okay, give him a chance to respond and let's move on. I don't think the removing a president has never been a popular issue, has it? I mean, you even go historically back to Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
It was kind of looked at historically as a political sort of impeachment. I think, you know, we in our lifetimes, we can remember the Clinton issue, and I think it kind of has the same connotation to it. And I think people are saying, here we go again, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I have changed my view about the Clinton impeachment, in particular looking at how the Trump, quote, impeachment inquiry that's not yet formally an impeachment proceedings has gone. And it's such a kangaroo court. That's one element to it. The other element is, as you mentioned, it seems to me that the American people, just if they elect a president, they kind of want to have that president have an opportunity to implement his policies. Clinton was reelected to a second term, and then, you know, he obviously, his behavior was inappropriate. He probably did commit a misdemeanor, at least, maybe a felony. But it wasn't, you know, in retrospect, it was salacious. It was, you know, his involvement with Monica Lewinsky, the cover-up, et cetera, the activity in which he engaged in the Oval Office, very inappropriate. But, look, everybody knew Bill Clinton was sort of a scoundrel. In that regard, right?
Right. They knew, yeah. We knew he was a rogue, you know, and everything. I of course, I supported the impeachment. I was on the radio back then, and I thought, yes, that a president's behavior like this, the fact that he might have used the power of his office to kind of cover it up, maybe get other people to lie or something like that, was important enough. I know that, you know, that wasn't the view of a lot of people. So looking at it historically, perhaps it wasn't the way to go, right? There were consequences to it. The nation's been extremely divided,
mm-hmm.
you know, since that happened. The other thing, and this was floated during the Clinton years, I know you don't really favor this as an option this time around, but, you know, the Clintons apparently went to Newt Gingrich and the House leadership with the idea that, look, drop this impeachment thing. We'll be okay with a censure. You can get or some sort of condemnation of the presidential behavior, and the Democrats will support this and we'll move on. They didn't want to do that. I keep thinking that is still an option out there, perhaps, to float to the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi, because, you know, what happens if you get to the point of, you know, the Senate has to take this thing up. Did the senators, the Republicans I'm talking about, really want to vote on whether they're going to be okay with the president's, you know, behavior dealing with this Ukraine phone call? They certainly don't want to remove him from office. Do they really want to be on record? And I think maybe they could look for some other option. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a good question. And I think if we went back in history, right, and if I had been advising Newt Gingrich back then, and the Clinton administration had come and said, okay, we'll take a censure, let's go for a censure, I think in the scope of history, I think now it would have been for the country, for the lack of, for more unity, it would probably would have been a good deal to do.
Because
at that
most
time.
Americans would agree, right? At the time,
I think
that
so.
The Monica Lewinsky thing was certainly wrong. He shouldn't have done it, and all that. Yeah. Well, of course, we have that opportunity now, right? To look back. I just remember talking about this option, and there was some discussion about whether it was really legal or not in some way.
Do a censure?
Right. Can you censure a president? Does Congress really have the right to do that? I think maybe call it something else, condemnation, whatever.
It's just symbolic, really.
Yeah,
just
right. That's all it would be.
It
right.
says you're a bad boy, Mr. President, and don't do it again.
Right.
Of course.
Right, don't do it again.
In that case, you know, like that behavior from Bill Clinton, you know, the guy just, it's in his DNA.
I mean, yeah, right.
Speaking
He's going to do
DNA.
It again anyway. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he did. But thing is, today, would it be possible, Mike, Republicans and Democrats say, okay, look, we don't want any future president. I think this is the thing. It's about future, future of the presidency. We don't want any president in the future. We're not excusing whatever's happened, but we don't want, a president holding up military aid to try to get a foreign government or whatever to investigate political rivals. We want to be on record in saying that. And this is not a high crime and misdemeanor of what the president's done, in our view, which is the standard for impeachment. But certainly we want to condemn that particular behavior for future presidents. It just seems to me that would be an option.
Let's have this question for you hanging through the break. If the Trump administration presented such an option to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House of Representatives, would they actually entertain that? That, I think, is the big question. Not that would it necessarily be a bad idea. I think it would probably be a good idea. But the bigger question for you, Doug, and you can answer when we come back, would the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi entertain such an option? You're listening to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett back after this.
It's the Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here and Doug Kellett. Doug, before the break, I'd asked the question, if the Trump administration said, okay, I went to Nancy Pelosi and said, okay, we'll take a censure, stop this impeachment stuff, how would Nancy Pelosi respond in your view? What's your best guess?
Well, got to put my Nancy Pelosi sort of hat on. That's really that's dangerous, right?
Dangerous.
Yeah, it's very. I don't know the answer to that. I would say that there was a story out there. I can't give you a source on it, but I do remember reading it that the president, when she first made the announcement about impeachment, the president apparently called Nancy Pelosi and wanted to know if there was a way to work this out. Now, what that would be, in my mind, okay, what can we do that, satisfies both of us in this particular area? And that's why I bring in this up. I think whatever you want to call it, if they presented to Nancy Pelosi and she said no, couldn't you go to the American people and say, look, we believe the behavior was, we should be on record saying that we don't want this kind of behavior for future presidents. We don't think that the president has, his activities here have risen to the level that he should be removed from office, but we don't want to divide the country any further. You know, one of the things that's really bothering me out there, Mike, and you've talked about this, a bunch, and, you're friends with Steve Bannon and he's friends with the president or whatever, and one of the things that bothers me is this idea that we're dividing the country even further.
Yes.
You know, there was a poll this week that you and I talked in another show about 7 out of 10 Americans believe we're headed to a civil war. Now, I don't know if that's a shooting war or is that, some other type of civil war, but at any rate, that's certainly a division in the country, right? 7 out of 10 Americans think that?
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. Now, back to what you said, though, there was a report that President Trump called up Nancy Pelosi, said, can we work this out? Now, what you missed in that is what she responded. Has there been any report as to what she responded
I think that's a good question. Well, I guess was no.
I think it was let's just say I think it was colorful language that was translated into.
Well, this is before he called her a third-rate politician, so maybe there was some room to work with then. I don't know. Well, she said, remember, before this whole impeachment thing, and I think even before the Ukrainian phone call and the whistleblower and all that came about, that she didn't want to impeach the president. She just wanted to see him in jail or something like that, right?
Yeah, right.
So there may not be any room to work with. But then here's what's going to happen. More than likely. I mean, it could be wrong, but I would say the chances, you know, like ESPN has their percentage of wins, you know, on the screen. Here's my percentage that this is going to happen. We're going to have impeachment. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a House probably with all Democrats, maybe one or two Republicans, I don't know, but mostly Democrats are going to vote to impeach the president. We're going to go to the Senate, and we're not going to convict him. He's not going to be removed, and that's going to be the end of it. That's where we are on this.
Yeah, I won't disagree on that. I think the broader problem here is, as you identified, the Democrats in the House of Representatives don't really seem to care that their actions are further dividing the country. And I think it's obvious that poll you mentioned, it's the battleground civility poll. We talked about that a little bit.
Shouldn't we all be really concerned about that, Mike? Republicans, Democrats, everybody? That the country is getting so divided? We're going to always be divided about some things, but I mean, to the point that maybe, you know, you got an umpire in the Major League Baseball this week. Another story that, you know, has made some comments. You know, he's for Donald Trump, and he's made some comments again, you know, of getting AR-15 or something, that there'd be an armed conflict if Donald Trump is removed from office kind of thing. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Well, yeah, it's a very problematic. Right. Remember, let's go back to Ben Franklin, right? The famous saying, you know, united we stand, divided we fall. And Ben Franklin had, as an illustration, he took, you know, 13 little branches. And if you took each one separately, you could break them over your knee. But you put all 13 together, you couldn't break them. And this is a problem. And it is, I think, my view is it is reckless for the Democrats to proceed with this kangaroo court impeachment inquiry where the president is being denied due process rights. It is reckless for them to do that, knowing full well that the 60 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump are furious with the lack of due process being given to the president in this. You know, you can debate about whether or not, you know, they have the right to do it or not to do it. The way they're doing it is infuriating at least 40% to 50% of Americans, further polarizing the country. What good does that do, Doug?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm concerned about. I mean, you nailed it, because here the difference now, I don't know about Andrew Johnson. I can't remember back then. You're the historian of the program. But I may have covered that, but I still don't remember. But the Bill Clinton, you know, he had already won a second term.
Yes.
And my view was back then, and what I argued was that there's no other way to remove him. Therefore, yes, the impeachment process and the removal from office for his bad behavior in this, using his office, I thought, to cover up, you know, get people to lie and this kind of thing, was too egregious. And therefore, he's not going back to the voters again, so we have to remove him from office. In this case, and this has been my view on this, on other shows and everything, is that the president has committed behavior that I personally don't agree with. I don't think we should be trying to invite foreign powers, you know, to look into, you know, dirt on anybody. But the thing is, we have an opportunity to vote for him or not. In other words, we're going to get that chance. He has a second election coming up. And so the American people can be the jurors. We don't need the Senate to make a determination about whatever the president's done in this past 3 years, 4 years, right? The people can decide whether they like it or not.
Yeah, I think that's the logical approach. But again,
logical. Wait a minute. How did that get in? We don't allow that in politics, right? I mean, you said it though a minute ago, didn't you? That the Democrats are doing it. It's a political thing. And why are they dividing the country? Because the left has gone so far left in America now, right? The Antifa crowd, the MoveOn.org bunch, you know, they're demanding it. They're demanding that there be this kind of division.
Yes, they're pushing it, and it's very troublesome. If you went into the brain, and we talked about this before, the brain of Nancy Pelosi, a dangerous place to go.
Yes, it is. We'll never come back. You'll never hear from us again, people.
Your mission, Doug, should you decide to accept it.
Well, I can go ahead and tell you right now. No, I will not accept it. That's a one-way trip to Mars.
Is to go into the brain of Nancy Pelosi. As always, the secretary will disavow your actions.
Well, here's the thing. We laugh about her, but she is a smart lady, right? I mean, I don't think I certainly don't want to what's the word I'm looking for? Overlook her ability to, you know, think these things out. I mean, she, a woman becoming Speaker of the House and being around as many years as she has, she knows how to do things in Washington, right? It may not be things we like, but yeah, underestimate. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, let's try this. Let's take a visit to the brain of Nancy Pelosi.
Okay.
We are inside the
brain.
You're
determined.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're inside the brain of Nancy Pelosi. And we're trying to discern the true thoughts as to whether or not she is bothered by the divisiveness of the kangaroo court. And I think the answer, here's the answer. The answer is, I want power. I don't care how I get it. I could care less about polarization. I think that's what's going on inside her brain.
Yeah, I do. But that's my criticism of Washington, D.C., right? I mean, people talked about draining the swamp. Isn't the swamp divisiveness in a lot of ways? I don't know if there is anything politically in the middle anymore that the left and the right can agree on. I don't know. You know, that's for others to figure out. But, yeah, dividing the country intentionally, yeah, we should care about that. And, yeah, I think you're right. I think if she doesn't do this, she loses power. She doesn't She's not Speaker of the House any longer.
Jimmy's got the right music for her.
I thought we were going to do Red Alert like Star Trek or something, but we went with another, you know, science fiction theme here.
All right. More when we come back. This is the Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett. We took a dangerous trip inside the mind of Nancy Pelosi.
Yes, and we live to regret it. yes, we did. We somehow survived there. The empire did strike back while we were looking, but you never know, right? I mean, Nancy Pelosi is Speaker of the House for a reason. She's been able to, well, twice she's been able to grab it, Mike. And I ask you this question. You like to ask me questions. Is Nancy Pelosi running circles around Donald Trump? Is she making big mistakes dealing with Donald Trump and underestimating Donald Trump? Where do you come down on this?
I think she's a clever politician who is kind of maneuvering to maintain power when the more activist portion of her base, the left-wing lunatics, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the anti-free market, anti-Semitic, you know, anti-capitalist Ilhan Omar, that crowd, they are, you know, they just want to, you know, eviscerate the Trump administration and Donald Trump. And so she's got that pressure there. And so I think part of it is she has sort of triangulated towards this impeachment inquiry, which is, you know, a violation of the tradition of how an impeachment proceeding should go forward. I don't know if ultimately, I mean, it's sort of speculation. I don't know if you could say ultimately that she is running circles around Donald Trump, because he is, after all, the president of the United States. He did get elected. He's still in office. He's doing great in terms of our foreign policy, in terms of our economic growth. We got peace and prosperity. So I think, you know, he's doing well. He's honoring most of his promises, which is unusual for an elected president. But she's, you know, using all of her powers to try and bring him down.
Yeah, I don't think she's running circles around him either. I'm trying to figure out what the end game is here, though. If the end game is to remove the president, we're not going to do it with impeachment unless something really comes out that's even more damaging or whatever than anything we've heard, right? Yeah. And that means they got to come up with something.
They're looking feverishly for something they can hang their hat on.
So how does this help the Democrats in these battleground states win whoever the nominee is against Donald Trump then?
Well, I don't think it does help them, as you've pointed to this poll in Wisconsin. Perhaps one of the three most important battleground swing states, Wisconsin, surprisingly, in the last election, went for President Trump. He got the 10 electoral college votes from Wisconsin. Big surprise. And that state, Michigan and Pennsylvania, he won by 100,000 votes. Had he lost those three states, we would be saying President Hillary Clinton today. And we'd have, instead of, 18,000 refugees coming in this year from states that are, not hotbeds of terrorism, we'd have 200,000 refugees coming in from Somalia and Iraq and Iran and Sudan, Yemen, hotbeds of terrorism. They'd be coming into the U.S. and taxpayers would be paying for them.
I want to make a prediction. Nobody will remember it anyway except you. If Elizabeth Warren wins the Democrat nomination, after what she said this week about Pennsylvania, I'm going to further put the coal miners out of business again. It was the same thing Hillary said. I go on record saying Donald Trump wins Pennsylvania because the coal mining business is important to that state. It's the number of jobs I think I heard created was 400,000. In the coal mining industry since President Trump took office here in just 3 years. That's pretty tremendous. And if it's not Joe Biden, if it's Biden, then, I'm not making a prediction because I think it will go down to the wire. But I think if it's Elizabeth Warren, I think you can put Pennsylvania in Trump's category.
Yeah. Now, I missed that.
It was another one of those like Hillary. Wasn't it Hillary said she was going to put the coal miners out of business?
In West Virginia.
Virginia, okay. Well, but that still matters in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, did she actually say that?
Let me find the... You're going to put me on the spot.
No.
That's the problem. I read all these things and forget where I got them, but I'll find it. But yeah, she said something about the coal miners and the coal business because, again, you got to remember that Elizabeth Warren is another one of these climate change Democrats here, and that will affect the industry. And so I'm just thinking that if she gets elected, how can they ignore that? So therefore, I don't think Biden is going to be quite that clear on what he wants to do about the coal industry, is he?
Well, I mean, he probably will move in that direction. It wouldn't surprise me that Elizabeth Warren would have said that she wants to shut down coal miners' jobs. Apparently,
She may not have said it in exactly that way. I may be, adding a little bit, but the point is that she wants to do away with that industry, and so she may not say she wants to do away with coal miners' jobs. But the thing is, it's about once again, this fossil fuel argument and its effect on the climate.
Yeah, I think. I don't know if Elizabeth Warren specifically said, take those Pennsylvania coal miner jobs and shove
them. Right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I didn't mean to leave that impression.
But
I'll find you the story that I was talking about. But it's again, this week, it's another one of these, opportunities for the Democrats to attack the gas and oil and coal industry.
So I found a story from Palisades Hudson Financial Group. And she says the following, and they say the following. Elizabeth Warren is no more a friend of the coal industry than was Hillary Clinton. Her campaign pledge of $3 trillion to move the United States to 100% clean energy by 2035 would do exactly what Clinton promised to do. So, there you go.
Doesn't that keep, do we believe that that mattered in the campaign of 2016?
I think it does. Let me continue.
Trump said, I love coal, right?
Yeah.
He said, I love coal.
Let me continue, which makes your point. A plan like Warren's would hit hard in Pennsylvania, which has benefited greatly from renewed mineral extraction in its underdeveloped Appalachian hills. It would hurt the industrial cities of Ohio. It would be a financial knife aimed at U.S. car companies, which rely on profits from large pickup trucks, etc. So, yeah, it's all this. I mean, her plan is basically, you know.
If I remember right, Mike, there was something in there, too, about she wants to take care of the coal miners, their health or something. I can't. In other words, it was going to be a tremendous spending plan for the health of coal miners. So she's like, basically, yeah, I'm going to put you out of business, but, you know, I'm going to take care of you kind of thing.
I'm going to make you dependent on the state, right?
Right.
You can't make
exactly.
a living.
Something like that. Yeah, so, yeah, and of course, she's coming out with all kinds of plans that cost a lot of money that even her Democrat challengers are talking about.
So the thing about Elizabeth Warren, and I'm glad you brought it up because she's up and she's down. She's up and she's down in some polls, right? The thing about her is she just can't help herself. She hates capitalism. She cannot really review the facts and understand them logically. I did a story on Breitbart this week about her. You know, she went to the Chicago teacher strike. Did you see this? She went to the Chicago
teacher
strike.
She carried some picket signs, I think, didn't she?
Yeah, and then she gave an impassioned, erratic, and questionable speech, basically saying, we have our power through the unions. That's how we get our power. Now, that may play well in left-wing Saul Alinsky home Chicago, but in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in Peoria, Illinois, I don't think it plays well at all. And she is tone deaf to how people respond to that.
Yeah, is there a southern state she can win at all? For example, I mean, Florida, is that? Is Elizabeth Warren would be in play with Donald Trump in the state of Florida?
You know, in Florida,
with that kind of,
you know what I'm going to do in Florida? I'm going to go down to Jupiter, Florida, and there will be a reenactment of a battle down there that was in 1836, where her great 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 grandfather, Jonathan Crawford, went around with Major William Lauderdale and killed a bunch of Seminole Indians. I'm going to go down there and we'll see how that plays in Florida for her.
I'm sure she'll join you. Yeah,
sure. Yeah. We'll be back with Battleground State Report after this.
With Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen. You can go to our site, battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com. This is a weekly program and growing throughout the country as all of the country, Doug, it seems, is a battleground these days.
It is, and I really enjoy this show because it gives us a chance to focus really on, you know, the upcoming election 2020 and specifically some of the states that are going to be the big players. You know, a lot of times I tell some of my friends, you know, they'll say, well, I'm going to vote against you. And in the state, so a lot of states, it really doesn't matter when it comes to, like, the president or something because we already know how they're going to vote, how they're going to go. But there are some states where that's not the case, and those are the ones we focus on. And, you know, we've mentioned a number of them. I think you've targeted 17 or so battleground states where how the people vote there is going to make a difference.
And I'm going to be this week. This coming Friday, I'm going to be in one of those 17 battleground states. I am going to be broadcasting my daily program on Friday morning from the famous studios of WHO Radio in Des Moines, Iowa. How about that?
That'll be fun, you know? You think about the history of that particular radio station, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Ronald Reagan, I think, wasn't Reagan at that radio station at one time?
I'm going to find that studio. Yeah. I'm going to find the Ronald Reagan studio where he broadcast, and I'm going to broadcast from that studio.
I'm glad you mentioned that because there's a poll in Iowa that has Joe Biden like number four. I don't know about this particular. You know all the different polling organizations. I want to say it's like Civics or something like that. But it's a story that I saw at Breitbart.com, and it's he's now in fourth place. In Iowa, Elizabeth Warren seems to be doing better there.
So I would tend to believe that poll, and let me tell you why. We have a regular guest called Jim LaRue, who lives in Iowa. He's been my friend for over 40 years. We went to Harvard together. He was a year in front of me, and we were roommates together in Washington, D.C. way back when for one summer. I was working as a, if you can believe it, a bureaucrat in the Urban Mass Transportation Administration as an intern. Yes, yes, yes. I was a Democrat then.
I was just thinking after I woke up that you survived that, I guess, apparently, right?
it was formative in changing me from a Democrat to a Republican in part. But Jim was he was really a prodigy in politics in Iowa. And he'd formed a friendship with John Culver. And in 1974, John Culver was the first Democrat elected to the United States Senate from Iowa, I think, in like 100 years or something like that, a long time. And Jim was his field representative guy, still a student at Harvard, wrote a thesis on how Iowa changed from a, shall we say, a red state to a purple blue state at that time. He's been involved in Iowa for 40 years. And every 4 years, all the Democratic presidential candidates court him. He was the chief of staff and the general counsel for the Democratic governor of Iowa, Chet Culver, the son of the late Senator John Culver in the early 2010 to 2014. Anyway, she knows all these guys. And so he's my good friend, and despite the fact that he's a Democrat and I'm a Republican. And so we have a good dialogue about this. He's going to join me in studio on Friday, and then he's my ambassador. My ambassador.
Well,
to
you
the,
need some ambassadors. Oh, I yes, do. Definitely.
I,
yes.
Do I need them? He's my ambassador to the 2020 Democratic presidential field. And that night, if credentials are given, Friday night, I will be attending the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, which is now called the Liberty and Social Justice Dinner. Because, Democrats cannot acknowledge their founding presidents, Thomas Jefferson, because he was a slaveholder, Andrew Jackson, because he was a slaveholder and was the president during the time of the Trail of Tears. And, they hate those guys now. They can't even mention their name. Anyways, all, 19 contenders will be there, and I'm going to be there, and Jim will help introduce me to them, and I'll be polite.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Yeah. You're going to be. Are you sitting at the Al Sharpton table in the social justice wing of the proceeding there, or whatever? Know. So that should be really interesting. Are we seeing a lot of the Democrat candidates going to be at at this?
Yeah, anything? They're all going to be there. They have a couple minutes. But what Jim told us that was, I think, early. We got the early warning of what's going on in Iowa. And the rising candidate there, he always told me for months that there would be somebody would catch fire. And the guy who's caught fire in Iowa is Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg is in second place in that poll. And Jim told me that he thought that Buttigieg is gaining support and is likely to be the one of the three or four Democrats to emerge from the caucuses in Iowa that will be held in the first week of February, and then go on and still be a viable candidate when they go on to New Hampshire. I think that is the case, actually.
That's interesting. It is. And he continues to show up in fundraising, doing well. Yeah. And it would be someone that, here's a mayor from a very small town. You wouldn't expect him to be, really holding his own, especially in these debates or whatever, with some pretty big names of the Democrat Party. But he is. And then, of course, the fact that he does talk about the fact that he is gay, I think also plays a role. It sort of makes him stand out in this whole field, right?
He's gay? Really?
I know you've heard that, right?
Is he married to a
man? But
it
doesn't. It helps in the fundraising, I believe, actually. Do you? I think Do you think that sort of helps him in that regard? Because he is obviously you know, standing out from some of the other candidates.
Absolutely. And, you know, gay members of our society are engaged politically. They have discretionary income, and they are eager to use it to support. And gays who are Democrat give him a lot of money. He's raised, I don't know, $25 million.
That's what I mean. He's outdoing Joe Biden, by the way, in some you know, in some stories. Now, Joe Biden's going to be on 60 Minutes this Sunday. When you're listening to this program, he'll have done an interview here. And what do you think? What's going to be said in that interview, I guess? I mean, it's just his chance to highlight himself before maybe this Iowa gathering or something?
Well, I think what he's going to do in the interview is he's going to attack Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. and the Trump family. That's what he's going to do. He's got to get a counterpoint to the corruption by proxy in which his son, Hunter Biden, is obviously involved in the Ukraine and China and now Romania. I mean, if you wanted to have influence on American foreign policy or American policy during the Obama administration, apparently the number one thing you did was hire Hunter Biden and pay him $50,000 a month to do.
Is part of the swamp that people talk about, right? I mean, it's the idea of influence, whether it's yourself or maybe your family members. You hold a big position in Washington, and they sort of benefit from it. This is sort of Exhibit A of that kind of behavior.
See, what Joe Biden hides behind is, well, there's nothing illegal. Maybe, maybe not. But what clearly is unethical, and clearly it's playing to the swamp, it is corruption by proxy, because if you look at it, you know, people ask, the question that Hunter Biden has not answered is, remember, he was hired by this Ukrainian company whose head was unable to be in Ukraine because he was under investigation for corruption. It's called Burisma Holdings. It's a natural gas company. And so 2 weeks after his dad was named by President Obama to be the point person on Ukrainian policy for the United States, surprise, surprise, Hunter Biden gets a contract with this company, and they pay him $83,000 a month, apparently. To do, what did he do for that? What did he do? He doesn't speak Ukrainian. He never went to the Ukraine. He sat in an office in Washington, D.C., and did what exactly did he do? He won't say what he did. What do you think his timesheet looks like, Doug?
Well, I guess his resume was, his last name was Biden, right? He was a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, perhaps, as they used to say about things. I don't know. I like what you said, though, and I think it needs to be repeated, and that is, it's not about sometimes whether things are legal or illegal. I think our society really focuses on that. It's really whether your behavior and things that you do, are they right or wrong? Right? And we don't spend a lot of time talking about that. It can still be legal, but be something you shouldn't be doing.
Well, in terms of conflict of interests, I mean, just think about this. Doug, let's just say for the sake of discussion, your dad was vice president of the United States.
Then I'm going to be on the board of that Burisma thing pretty soon.
Okay,
right?
So your dad's vice president. Let's just play this out.
Yeah, okay.
And
$85,000, you said,
well,
right, a month?
Here's the thing. So your dad is named the point person for policy in the Ukraine. And 2 weeks later, you get a call from this Ukrainian company, and Doug, we know you don't speak Ukrainian. We know you don't know anything about natural gas or oil or exploration. But we would really like to pay you $83,000 a month to be on our board. And oh, by the way, you don't have to sit on any meetings, and you don't have to come to the Ukraine. Now, what's your thought process when you get that proposition?
Well, obviously, I mean, jokingly, I'd say, here's my router number on my checking account. But but in reality, yeah, I could just see, first of all, just I would think I would have enough integrity, and I know my father would, to the point of, what are you doing? This is obviously, you know, they're buying influence here. This it's not right. It doesn't look good. And you shouldn't do it. I think that's part of it. There has to be some built-in ethics within the individual, does there not, to say no to things like this. And you would think Joe Biden, knowing that he might run for president in the future, would have had a problem with it anyway.
Well, see, here's the thing. I think the more Joe Biden defends this arrangement as legal, the worse he looks. Because
I mean, wasn't there stories like Obama's wife, you know, Michelle, getting sort of privileges or something in a law firm? No, maybe it was Hillary Clinton. I can't remember now. But the point was that this kind of influence, you know, has gone on in Washington, and we're familiar with it, right? And maybe Biden looked at it like, well, everybody does it. It's one of those everybody does it arguments.
Yeah, does that? But yeah, Dad would say, does that make it right, son? Right?
No, I know, but they, you know, different generation, right? Maybe looks at it differently, although I guess, you know, Vice President Biden is closer to my dad's generation, you know, than I am. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is a built-in ethics issue there, but certainly there would have been an obvious conflict. It would seem to me that if you want to benefit from your, you know, your parents and their sort of political positions or whatever, and you, there would be a legitimate way to do it. But if you want to benefit, you certainly want to do it in obvious conflict.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the good news for us, Doug. These same issues in various forms will be front and center when we talk about this next week on the Battleground State Report.
They're not going away, are they?
They are not. Hey, Doug, thanks for a great show today. And go to battlegroundstatenews.com, Battleground State Report. Same time, same place next week. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. Thanks for joining us.